We are so privileged to be back. It's just such an encouragement to my heart to be with you guys. And I can't speak for Erin. I don't know what she feels in her heart, but my heart feels really encouraged to be with you guys. And it's just such an honor to be able to just really open the word with you. So how many of you guys are keeping up with your superhero movies? I know it's getting hard these days. They're coming out like, bop, bop. Are you keeping up with the Marvel movie? Like three people? I know that's not true. Come on. Yes, okay. Yeah, so Spider-Man has always been a fascinating story to me. And, you know, the hardest thing to believe, what do you think the hardest thing to believe about Spider-Man's story is? Well, you're thinking spider skills, right? But that's completely believable. They explain that with the radioactive spider, and that's a perfectly logical explanation. So I have no problem with the spider skills. I don't know what's in radioactivity. It could do all that stuff. Who knows? So, like, that perfectly explains it. To me, the hardest thing to buy about Spider-Man is that there's a teenager in the world that could have those kind of abilities and save the world and do those amazing things and never tell his friends. No way. No way. No way. There's not a chance. And I mean, I'm not dogging out teenagers. Me neither. I would be on social media, bah, bah, check that out. You know, like, this, to be that strong and that capable and have that many incredible accomplishments and never be able to talk about it, that's crazy. It's the exact reason why I'm not a spy, right? Other than that, I was perfectly qualified. But I could never do it because when you watch a movie about spies and they're all like, you know, the guy goes out, risks his life, takes down a world regime and comes back and his kids are like, how was your lame paper job, Dad? You're so lame. You know, like, I hate, you just feel this like, they don't know that he's amazing, but you know, they think he sells pins or like prints paper and like, but he's out doing these amazing things. I mean, how in the world could you resolve that tension to want to, you know, to push everything out and be so incredibly capable and so strong and have so many good accomplishments, but nobody knows about it. I'm like, that is completely unhuman because everything in us wants to push our strengths and accomplishments to the surface. And like we just kind of had this pressure for life to be going up and to the right. And I feel like I've never felt it more than when we moved. And Erin already alluded to it, though. Because we came from a place where, honestly, part of it is like I get to do stuff on a stage in front of you. So like you know that I'm good at certain things or whatever. And that was like, it kind of felt like, oh, yeah, you know, I wasn't even aware of it. But when I went to a place where all of a sudden nobody knows anything about me, no idea what kind of skills or whatever or any kind of credentials or any reason that they should respect me or think about me or care about me in any kind of way, you know? And it's not like they were rude. They were just normal people. But there's this temptation. You're in a conversation with somebody. You're meeting them for the first time and like, you know, tell me about yourself. And you just like, it's like almost like vomit. Like you just want to be like, I do all these things. Like I just want to tell you these things. Can I sing a song for you right now? Like, do you have time? How much time do you have? It's just like, you just want to say all this stuff because, like, we're used to building up on our strengths and accomplishments, you know? So, like, we do this thing where, you know, it starts maybe in high school. You get that award for, like, your picture. And they're like, oh, you're a great photographer, even if you weren't, you know, maybe you're the best out of third grade. But you got the award or for, like, your creative writing. And then maybe you got a senior superlative if you were, like, really cool and you got, like, most likely to succeed or something, and that's in there. Maybe you got your sports accomplishments. Or if you're not a sports guy, IT skills. Because those two things don't often go together. It might, but, you know, maybe you had both. You got your friends, and I say friends because these are like digital friends, like the number of friends that you have on Instagram and all that stuff. I know they're followers on Instagram. Don't knock me on the details. Friends or stuff on Facebook or all these different things, but they're not like real friends, but, you know. Maybe you got that college degree, right? Which was a big accomplishment. So, you know, you stacked that on there. You're proud of that. And then you went extra hard, got the master's, right? Because that's legit these days. And you aren't messing around. You built up over time some communication skills, right? Like, you're like, I became a decent communicator. And then you got that certification. Like this certification that you needed to be eligible for the next thing or whatever. So you got that certification. We stack that on there. Then you knocked out the promotion. Congratulations on that, by the way. So you had that new job, and that kind of kicks you up a little bit. And then you got some management experience, which you're going to stack that on there, too. At some point in the process, maybe you got married. And that's a big accomplishment. So that's a good thing. So we'll stack that on there. It makes you feel good about yourself. We, at some point, had kids, maybe. So you became a parent. And I know it's a big accomplishment making that happen. Guys, you have a huge role in producing that child, and that's great. So good job. But, you know, especially if you're a mom, you're like, you're not going to stop at just being a parent. You got to do something extraordinary. So you made your own baby food. Because the grocery store stuff just isn't for your kid, right? And then at some point, then your kids start to succeed at things in sports, or when they get older, they get this cool job. And so then your kid's success now becomes a thing that you're building up here. And what we sit on top of all of these strengths and accomplishments is this very, very big idea called status. So we build a status in the world, like that's where we rank in the world based on our strengths and accomplishments, right? And it sits on top of this tower. And that seems kind of right to us. I think especially like in the Western world, we're kind of into the whole you are what you do thing. And there's something that seems right about like, you know, you're responsible to make yourself. You are who you make yourself to be. And that seems about right. We don't see something terribly wrong with that. But here's the hidden thing that we don't always think about. It's hidden inside of status. And we don't always realize it's there, but this is where it gets complicated. You got this big, heavy thing called value. And it's like your whole self-worth and your value and importance in the world. And that just is hidden right inside of there. Now you're all very tense. And you know it's a good illustration when everybody's like, oh my gosh. Because the truth is, you know, now that thing could fall, right? Because there's a lot of weight on it. And if it falls, like how devastating is that? But that's what happens. Like we build a status on top of our strengths and accomplishments, and maybe we don't even realize it, but riding inside of that thing is an enormous weight of value and self-worth, and it puts an enormous crushing weight on every single one of those. And there is a cost to that. We're going to try to summarize some of the cost of that right here. So if you gauge your value by achievements, a couple of things can happen here. One is that life becomes a competition. So you're building this tower, and so you're very aware of the other towers around you, right? Like, so when you hit that social media feed and you're like, oh man, that's cool. Oh, wow, they got the new thing, or look at what their kids are doing. And all of a sudden you're like, man, I got to add another brick. You gotta get another brick. Maybe I can work on that thing. So like all of a sudden, like there's a tower envy thing going on. You're trying to build that status up because it's not enough to just succeed. You have to be more successful than someone else. You can't just be good. You have to be better, right? And so that makes it just continually elusive. You never feel like you achieve to where you want to go. And so that's like, that leads to a breakdown with others and relationships in your life, because then you have this pride and conceit and the jealousy and all these things that come with that. So then there's another thing, and this is a breakdown with yourself, and it comes because you can never really feel secure. It's that insecurity that you felt when I dropped a weight on top of this thing, and it starts to like quiver, and you realize, oh, that is unstable. It is unstable. And so is a life built on strengths and achievements. Because the truth is, nobody wins all the time. So we live with this constant fear of failure. It's not just, oh, a brick fell, let me get another. It's like, no, myself fell. My life feels hopeless now because everything came crumbling down. So it really just completely defines the way that we live our life. And it can lead us to a couple of different things. Maybe it's overwork and burnout because you're constantly trying to build this thing up, constantly trying to compete, constantly trying to get better and better and better. And you're trying to keep yourself from failure, and you just cannot let one fall. So you got to constantly be just killing it at work, at family, at everything, right? And you just feel this enormous anxiety and pressure. The other side of that is maybe yours does fall. And then you just feel hopeless and bitter and resentful and angry. And so both of those are just, there's too big of a cost. So how do we get off this train, right? If this is the way the world's always going to push us towards, culture's always going to push us towards identifying our status on top of our strengths and accomplishments, and that kind of even feels a little bit right, but now we're like, oh no, that's dangerous. What other option do we have? What can we do? Okay, so Paul is going to help us out. The Apostle Paul wrote this brilliant letter called 2 Corinthians. It's not called that, but we call it that. But it was the second letter he wrote to the Corinthians that we have, anyways. And it's incredibly important. I'm going to give you the background, because if we don't know the background, then you're not going to feel the gravity of these words. So I got to set it up. So we're going to eventually end up in 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 21. So if you got to read it on your page, we'll have it on the screen. But if you're like, I got to see it on my thing, that's fine. You go ahead and do that. So Paul is on these journeys, right? Around, he's trying to start as many churches as he can in places where he knows they just have not heard the gospel message. So he ends up in Corinth, and he begins to tell people about Jesus, and he stays there for a year and a half. This is a significant portion of his life, especially for him. That's a long time to be parked one place. And he spends a year and a half pouring the gospel into people, telling them how this plays out in their life practically and like what it looks like to live this new way. And then he begins to build up leaders in the church and elders and pastors and teachers in the church so that when he leaves, the church has some stability. And he puts a year and a half of his life and his whole heart into this. And you can tell with Paul, when you read his letters, it's just like affection. He cares so much about these people. So when he was there, he was pouring in his life into these people for a year and a half. And then he moves on, and he hears back eventually that there's some weird stuff going on in Corinth. And if you're familiar with the first letter to Corinthians, you're like, there's some really weird junk going on in there. And he writes to say, hey, this is a little off base, and maybe you guys forgot that we had talked about this. You need to get this kind of in order. Here's some things that to help you understand how the gospel works practically in your lives and what it means to be different and these kind of things. So 1 Corinthians is about that. Sometime after that letter, some guys come into the church in Corinth, or maybe they were already there, and they just begin to gain authority, and they begin to question some of his teachings. And then in order to boost their own credibility, they begin to knock his credibility. They're like, so who is Paul anyways? And why does Paul have authority in Corinth? Because Corinth is this big Roman city. When we have authority figures, you know, they have serious credentials. Our speakers are amazing speakers. Our intellectuals are amazing intellectuals. Our leaders are fantastic, proven leaders. Who is Paul? So they begin to kind of knock his credentials and his authority. And then there's a time where he goes to try to visit the church in Corinth. Maybe he's gotten wind of this, or we're not sure of all the circumstances. We just know little bits and pieces. He goes there, and he's basically turned away. They don't really want to hear from him. And essentially, he's asked, like, do you have any references? Can you bring your resume next time? You know, something along these lines that, like, where are your credentials, you know? And so he gets turned away from a people that he has just completely poured his heart into for so long. And I want you to feel the humanity of that moment. Because he's not just like a robot churning out churches. He's a person who poured his heart and soul into people and then had those people turn away and reject him. And then he writes a letter that we don't have. The only thing we know about it is it was harsh. He said, I wrote to you a harsh letter. And I don't know what that is. It might be like, we don't have it. Maybe it's good we don't have it. Maybe there's some like crazy stuff. Maybe it's like that, you know, a drunk text that somebody sends to their ex, you know, after they're like angry and they're like, oh no, I wish I didn't send that. We don't have any reason to believe that. And actually, rewind that back. I didn't say that. That's probably not good. But we don't have that letter. We don't know what was in that letter. We just know it was harsh, and it was about, like, you guys have missed the gospel in this. And so there's some kind of, like, they start to feel sorry for what happened, and he gets wind of that. So then he plans another visit, and he sends this letter ahead of him, the 2 Corinthians. And so a good portion of this is supposed to be him presenting a defense. At least that's what they're expecting, a defense of why they should listen to Paul. What authority does Paul have? Here we go. This is, he kind of defends his position, but not in a way that any of them actually wanted to hear. Because what they wanted, which was very appropriate in those Roman cultures, you know, if there was an authority figure, they had to bring a list of, like, the things that they've done. And it was called a cursus honorum, right? So that's going to be any position you held, how long you held it, the battles you fought in, the things that you did, the crowns that you won, and the medals, and the thing. Like, here is the reason. It would be inscribed on the statue, right? It would be brought with you in person, if you were like running for office or if you were going to be an authority figure in Roman culture, you would have this thing. And so in some capacity in their mind, they're probably thinking, it would be great if Paul could like show up. Even his supporters are probably thinking, I know that you got these qualifications. Why don't you just throw them down, you know? And in the book of 2 Corinthians, you'll find he never, ever gives it to him, even though he does have it. He has incredible credentials, but he never offers it to them. And it's almost frustrating how that happens. So let's pick up in 2 Corinthians 11. And this is right near the end of the letter. So at this point, they've got to be thinking, all right, man, are you going to do it? Because we really want to hear the list, right? Roll it out. And so let's pick it up right here, 2 Corinthians 11. But whatever anyone else dares to boast of, and then he does these parenthetical statements because he reminds them, by the way, this is stupid. What you're asking me to do is dumb. But okay, I'll be dumb for you for a little while. Whatever anyone else dares to boast of, I'm speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. So they're like, oh, here it comes. It's about to go down. Are they offspring of Abraham? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I am a better one. They're like, yeah, here it is. Here it is. And then he's like, I'm talking like, this is dumb, by the way. This is an idiot thing to do, but I'm about to do it with far greater labors, far more imprisonments, and with countless beatings, often near death. 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in wilderness. We're like, we get the point, Paul. Danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there was a daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? I mean, that's an interesting way to end that off. He's just like, by the way, there's no one weaker than me. Let me just clarify what I'm trying to say here. No one is weaker than I am. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. So they're asking for the tower, and he flips the thing upside down, and he gives them, instead of a course of honor, really a course of shame. Here's the most embarrassing low moments of my life. That's my credibility. What is happening? Like, Paul is just confounding their expectations here. What is he trying to say through this? Because this is huge. He actually says, if I'm going to boast about anything, I'm going to boast about the terrible things. I'm going to boast about my weaknesses. Why? Is he saying never play to your strengths, only do things you're bad at? Is he saying that? Would he give advice if somebody's like, you got incredible administrative skills. You can work a spreadsheet like a wizard. You're just amazing at that. But you're a terrible singer. Here's the plan. Quit the job. Try out for American Idol. That's what you need to do. That's the plan. Would he say, go with your weaknesses, never go with your strength? No, it's not what he's saying. But you got to understand the context. They're asking him to build up a status on his strengths. And he's saying, I will never do that for you. Because that would be a loss for me to do that. That would be a misplacing of my value if I did that. Can't ever do that. I will not be defined only by my strengths. I refuse. If I'm going to be defined by anything, it's weakness. And he's showing them something incredibly important, and it's something that we all desperately need to hear. So why? First off, maybe how is the first question. How can Paul... Because we know that we build these towers because we have to feel valuable. But there's a sense of self-worth. How does Paul roll out a list of shameful things and not just have his self-worth be on the floor? How can Paul say, I don't even celebrate my strengths, and not just feel no value at all in himself? Like, how can he break free from this system? And then two, why should it? Why is it so important that we also break free from this? Why is it important that he not do this, and why is it important for us as well? So we're going to look at that. And so the first thing is this. The status you really need can't be earned. It is given. And so I really think that the answer to how can Paul do this comes in his understanding of the gospel and what he's been telling them over and over again, which is why he refuses to give them this, is that the gospel actually provides you a status that you can't earn. It is freely given to you, and it's the one you've been after your whole life. So why would you settle for something else? Because this is seeking the approval of other people. And that will always be elusive. It'll never be enough. That win at work only feels like a win for like a minute until somebody's like, man, that's awesome. I can't wait to see what you do next quarter. And then you're like, oh, I got to do better. You know, it's just like all of a sudden that even the wins don't feel like wins for very long. And there's always going to be someone that's a little bit ahead of you that puts that you feel like, oh, I don't have the value that I felt like I was going to have when I achieved to this level. There's always something else. It's always elusive. That approval is conditional. And he's saying what you're looking for is an unconditional approval. You're looking for an unshakable status. And here's the good news. You can have one. But you got to stop trying to earn it. Because that comes by grace. And grace, in definition, is it's a free gift. That because Christ offered himself, took on our sin, he offers us his perfect status. And because of that, we have a status that is available to us in Christ that is unshakable, unmoved. It's not built on some kind of wobbly foundation that is conditional and based on our performance. It's like you have a status that is fixed and eternal, and you can take this value and you can put it right in here because you have the approval of God on your life. If you're in Christ, you have the approval of God on your life completely, unconditionally based, nothing on your performance. It has nothing to do with your strengths. It has nothing to do with your weaknesses. So that's why Paul's saying, I will not let you define me by strengths, because that is the opposite of what I've been trying to say. I'm defined by Christ. My status is fixed. I'm not going to jump back onto this. And you shouldn't either, because you have something better. So Christianity is not achievement-based. The more insistent you are on earning grace, the farther you'll remain away from it. And Paul knows that these things, they're just completely logically inconsistent, grace and earning favor. It's just, they're the opposites of each other. It's like a square circle. You can't have earned grace. It doesn't work. It's logically incoherent. He's saying, I will not be thrown back into this because I have something better. So why is this important? It's important for us because we can spend an entire life trying to earn something that's offered for free. Can spend our entire life trying to earn something that's offered for free. And Paul says, I'm not going to go back into that. Why? And this is really important. I think that this is maybe probably the main reason why he's saying this. He's saying that I can't be defined by my weaknesses because it's too limiting. A life built on our strengths is too limiting for what God has for us. If you only ever play it safe, if you only ever do the things that you know will succeed, if you're only building a life on your strengths, accomplishments, and achievements, that's too small of a life. Because the truth is, if you had the weight of your self-worth on this thing, you know how likely you are to take risks? Not very likely. How willing are you to appear weak? Not at all. Not at all. So a life where you're whole value and self-worth rests on top of your performance, you're kind of paralyzed. You have to play it safe. You have to do the safe moves because you can't bring the whole thing down. And Paul's saying, I can't think that small. God has a huge calling on my life. And if you're a Christian, God has a huge calling on your life as well. He's saying, I can't think that small. I can't be limited just by my strengths. I have to be willing to be overextended well past my strengths into places of incredible weakness. And then he says, there's actually a secret that you should know. And he kind of reveals it to us, 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And just a couple verses here. He actually goes into this section where he talks about a thorn in his flesh, and it's kind of like this word picture of some kind of ailment or sickness or something that he had going on with him that was paralyzing and painful and difficult and made life very hard. And he asked the God to take it away, and God would not take it away. And then God kind of reveals to him, this is why I won't take it away. He said to me, my grace is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I want you to say this, so that. He's saying that I want to be in a place of weakness because that is where the power of God begins to rest on me in a unique and powerful way. For the sake of Christ, then I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, I am strong. He's saying what you think is strength is actually a place of weakness. And what you think is weakness is actually a position of strength. You've got it backwards. And in a way, what he's telling us is we will never know true strength unless we allow ourselves to be weak. Unless we are willing to extend past our strength, we'll never experience that empowering power of God. What Paul knows is that, time and time again, in the midst of his darkest moments and lowest moments and most difficult moments, that's when the power of God showed up in a more powerful and supernatural way. And he was like, playing to your strengths and doing what you know you're capable of, that's a natural life. But we don't need to live a natural life. We can live in something so much more powerful than that. But if you're content to just remain in the boundaries of your own strength, you might never experience it. Where would Paul be if he played it safe all the time? Where would we be if Paul never took risks and only did what he knew he would succeed at? Only went to places that he knew he'd be well received? Where would we be if Paul was content to stay in the boundaries of his own strength? And so, flip it around on yourself. Like, what great thing could be left undone if you are never willing to extend out to a place of weakness? What incredible thing, what person's life would not be changed if you were remained to stay content and play it safe just in the boundaries of your own skills and things you know you'll succeed at? And that'll be great social media feed material. If you live that natural life, what great thing is left undone? What power of God is never unleashed in and through your life? And I'm not saying here that we shouldn't know our strengths. Paul knows his strengths. Paul knows that he is a powerful thinker. And he knows that he can rival some of the most powerful thinkers in the world. So he's not afraid to show up in Athens and get into a debate. He's not afraid to show up in philosophical circles or religious circles and stir up debate because he knows he is strong in that environment. So it's not like he doesn't do things he's strong at. He knows exactly where his strengths are. Know your strengths, work in your strengths, but don't be defined by your strengths. And don't be limited to your strengths. God can do something so powerful through your weakness. But in some capacity, we have to allow ourselves to be pushed to that point. The other option is this, that we only ever show the good stuff, we hide the bad stuff, hide our weaknesses, and we put our value back on this, because the truth is, this isn't like a one-time decision. Now, Christ, you know, it's a one-time transaction where that transaction with Christ happens, but this decision to place my value there and not here, this is every day. This is every time you open Facebook or every time you hit your office, every time you talk to another mom who's like excelling in an area that you feel weak in. This is a decision you make in that moment to say, no, I will not put my value in that, because there's a status that's already secure so much better over here. I refuse, like Paul refused, I refuse to put that on there. And the truth is, you can still build up accomplishments and achievements. You can still do great things. And in a way, it's so much greater because you don't have the weight anymore. You can succeed. You can be successful. Paul was incredibly successful at what he did, mostly because he didn't have his entire value resting on his success. He was free to take risks and to fail and to have amazing things happen. And he was so much more successful because he didn't have the weight on top of it. We are not the sum total of all that we've accomplished. And life is not a report card. Which means that you're also not defined by your failures, which is really good news for some of us. Because we hear that voice every day. But if this is true, that we're not defined by our strengths or our failures, in a way, we're freed up to live life without the weight of self-worth and value riding on our shoulders. It's like you're about to take the test of your life and you're feeling the pressure, and then somebody comes in and whispers in your ear, the grades are already in, you already passed. You did awesome. Before you ever picked up your pen, and now all of a sudden, like, what does that do for you? Well, I mean, like, it probably frees you up to do better and feel good about what you're about to do because you already know the grades are in, and that is the gospel. The grades are in, you passed. Flying colors, amazing. Status secure forever. And the approval of God rests on your life, regardless of if you fail or succeed today or tomorrow or in the next decade or however successful your kids are, all of that. It's important. It has nothing to do with your status and your value. And that means everything. Would you guys pray with me? God, we do just thank you today, God, that we have a freedom in the gospel to not be defined by our abilities, to not be defined by our successes or our failures. God, thank you that you have locked down forever in a perfect status before God, our approval. And God, we just ask that you would just impress that on our hearts. And in every moment that we're tempted to go back to living a tower life, God, that you would remind us that it's already done. The grades are already in. We don't have to live that way. God, help us to not settle for that kind of life. And we thank you that because you made yourself weak, that we can tap into the real power of God. Help us to not settle for anything less. And we love you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.